This is Undaunted Life, a man's podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Thompson. Let's get into it. But in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect. That is 1 Peter 3:15. Guys, we got a lot to cover today, so we're going to dig in just here in just a second. But just wanted to give another thank you to our donors, guys. We're so thankful to every single one of you. I want you to know that every time I get an email that we get a donor from you guys, whether you're a new donor or a monthly donor or something like that, I pray for you by name. And I thank God for you specifically because you are giving up your hard-earned dollars to support us. Guys, if you've been blessed by what we do, we would love to have your support. So there is a donation link on our website. There's a donation link in the show notes here so you guys can check that out. And also, I want to remind you that on May the 17th, I will be speaking live at Church of 1122 there in Jacksonville, Florida. I will be presenting my Defeating Pro-Abortion Arguments talk. So that will be at the main campus. That's the San Pablo campus. So that's at 14286 Beach Boulevard, number 2 in Jacksonville, Florida. I will be releasing more information as I get it in terms of how you can RSVP for that because, you know, they're still trying to figure out some logistics, you know, which part of the campus it's going to be in, you know, childcare, all kinds of different things. And so as I get that information, I will make sure that that gets over to you. So again, it'll be that on that day, May the 17th, it'll be in the evening, like 7 or 7:30. I will get all that information to you. So keeping the abortion thing going, all the quick hitters today that we're covering are going to be on the abortion topic. So we're going to talk about Donald Trump's incoherent and amoral stance on federal abortion law, Vice President Kamala Harris becoming the first sitting VP to visit an abortion facility, Arizona reinstating a statewide abortion ban law, a U.S. medical academic journal falsely claiming that 64,000 children have been conceived in rape in pro-life states, and the Florida Supreme Court allowing a six-week abortion ban and opening the door for Florida voters in November to push the ban to the 15-week mark. So before we get there, I want to talk about something that I really wanted to talk about for a long time. Didn't really have the opportunity. I was going to talk about it before I kind of took my break a while ago, but I want to talk about Joe Rogan. Okay, I want to talk specifically about Joe Rogan and his public comments regarding Jesus and Christianity. And so here's the thing, as I've said before, I'm a fan of Joe Rogan. Basically, everything that Joe Rogan has done, I'm a fan of. I listen to his show quite often. A lot of his comedy is funny. You know, it's very inappropriate, but it is funny. You know, I liked him on Fear Factor. I really enjoy the way that he calls UFC fights, and I've listened to him do that for decades. But the interesting thing about Joe Rogan is here recently, he's had a lot of people on his show that have talked about Jesus, that have talked about God, that have talked about Christianity. So he seems to be surrounded by it right now. And I will constantly see these comments from people that seem very, very interested and super committed to Joe Rogan specifically coming to Christ, almost to the detriment of anyone else. And so we're very, very consumed by the idea that what if Joe Rogan became a Christian or what if Jordan Peterson became a Christian? And look, guys, I get it. Joe Rogan is the biggest podcaster in the world. He's technically the biggest name in media in the entire world, but I would just caution you to not get super concerned about certain prominent people joining Team Jesus, okay? Because even if they join Team Jesus, it doesn't really change much. It just changes eternity for, well, I guess it changes eternity for one person, but let's not just get, you know, wrapped around the axle with that. And so the thing with Joe Rogan is Joe Rogan has expressed very dismissive thoughts about Christianity and even just the existence of Jesus entirely, okay? Now, he's softened his stance and he's approaching it from a more polite way than he used to. Like way back in the day on his show, he would basically just lambast Christians as, you know, simpletons and morons. But there is a reality here, and it's that Joe Rogan is a very, very intelligent person and he has a very inquisitive personality, okay? So he'll invite someone on a show just so he can ask them questions about a subject matter that he wants to know more about. But the thing is, and the other reality, is that he is just woefully ignorant about Jesus, the tenets of Christianity, and also he seems to avoid conversations that would challenge and expand his knowledge of Christianity as a whole. And so this was, again, apparent in a recent interview that he did on the Joe Rogan Experience where he was hosting none other than Kid Rock. And so now, if you listen to the Joe Rogan Experience, you know that he has a lot of guests on from a lot of different walks of life and that his conversations typically last, you know, 2 to 4 hours. And so, you know, they're a commitment to listen to. So with that in mind, I just can't listen to every episode. It's just not possible. It's way too much content, even listening to it at 2x speed. But I do like Joe and I do like a lot of his guests. And so I end up listening to him quite a bit. But I typically skip most of the conversations that he has with other comedians, unless I'm a fan of that comedian, because those conversations are typically just, you know, them talking crap for 3 hours or something like that. So it's just not very informative or edifying for me. So on the Kid Rock episode, for whatever reason, I was at least intrigued to listen because, like most kids my age, at the time, I was a huge Kid Rock fan when he first came on the scene with Ba Wa Ta Ba and all those different things on his first album. And I essentially haven't listened to any of his music since I was in high school, but he's a big enough name and he says enough crazy stuff. And I thought the conversation would at least be interesting. Now, in the conversation, they talked about music, they talked about the rock star lifestyle, they talked about Trump because Kid Rock is like really good buddies with Donald Trump. They talked about the Bud Light controversy because, you know, Kid Rock, made a video shooting a bunch of Bud Light cans with an automatic weapon. And so in a lot of ways, he's almost responsible for the beginning of the Bud Light boycott. And they flowed on some other stuff. But toward the end of the conversation, they spent several minutes talking about Jesus and Christianity. And so that kind of made the rounds in Christian circles and on TikTok and Instagram and things like that. Now, I don't want to violate any fair use laws or whatever, because it's always kind of touch and go with like YouTube and different things like that. So there's a clip I found. It's about a 4-minute long clip. And I want to just play the entire thing, but I don't know that I'm allowed to do that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to post the entire YouTube video clip for that section that I'm talking about here in the show notes. So guys, what you might want to do is I'm going to be providing commentary on this clip. So what you might want to do, if you can easily and safely do this right now, go ahead and go to the show notes and go to that link in the notes section of this episode where, you know, wherever you're listening to this, and go ahead and click on that YouTube link and watch this video. Okay, it's just under 4 minutes long, or if you're driving, just listen to it or something like that. Just, you know, don't go looking for the link until you're at a red light or pulled over or something like that. But for those of you that can't do that right now, so you can't, you know, listen to that clip, maybe you haven't heard the clip before, just, you know, I want you to just keep listening to kind of what we're doing right now. And so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to start playing the audio from this section, but then I'm going to cut into it periodically with my commentary. Okay. And I want to give you some things to consider. So it may seem a little bit disjointed, me doing it that way, but that, you know, that's why I encourage you to watch the full clip first, but I will try to keep, you know, a little bit of flow going with that. Now I will warn you, if you have little ears nearby in your car or something like that, this is Kid Rock and Joe Rogan. Okay, so the language, it's not clean, and it's not, you know, I'm not going to be editing any of that out. Just a reminder, this is Undaunted Life, a man's podcast. So viewer and listener discretion is advised. We don't edit for any of that type of stuff here. You have been properly warned. Do not send me emails. So we're going to go ahead and get into it here. So again, this clip is in the show notes, so you can check it out yourself. But let's go ahead and go into the clip.
If you could go to one place, where would you go? If you had one shot, you can go back in time once and survive and come back to the future, where would you go?
Jesus.
Jesus. But what if there was nobody there?
Okay, so the what if nobody was there, that's Joe Rogan's bread and butter. So anytime someone brings up Jesus, like, I mean, I'm thinking of all the different times someone has brought up Jesus on his show. There's been a lot of instances of that here recently. This is where Joe Rogan goes. He's automatically challenging whether or not Jesus actually existed. So let's go back to the clip here.
Even better, I get them all to myself, just me and Jesus?
No, I mean, what if Jesus wasn't there? What if you go back and you're like, I just want to go see Jesus? And you're like, okay, fuck, he'd be what there. Time?
He'd be there. He'd probably like a DJ back then, fucking cutting his shit up. Fucking. He's there.
You think there's a real Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely?
Absolutely. 1,000%.
So Joe's just going back to the well again. He's very politely kind of pushing back. You know, he's just asking questions, as it were, like, oh, I'm just asking questions. You know, is there a Jesus? Would he even be there? That type of thing. And you don't see Kid Rock backing off at all. Now, one thing I forgot to mention, like, if you're watching this on YouTube right now, again, because of fair use, those laws are very, very interesting. And I don't want this episode to get pulled down. I'm probably just going to do like a stock images or something of this interview so that you guys can just see it. But I'm probably just going to be playing the audio underneath it so I don't get in any trouble. But let's go back to the clip here.
What makes you convinced?
My faith.
So that wasn't a mess up in the edit. I left that awkward pause in there because it just kind of hung in the air during the interview for that entire time. It just kind of hung there. And the thing is when Joe Rogan and people like him hear a word like faith, they think nonsense. Because these are people that think that everything has to have an evidentiary basis and it has to have proof. And so I can't remember the guy's name, and I don't know how to pronounce his last name anyway, but there's this pastor, I think in California, that goes to these college campuses and engages with people. And, you know, as these people are screaming at him, like, what's the proof for God's existence? Like, what's the proof? He basically says, I can't prove anything to you. Because proof means that there's no possibility that it could be any other way. And so he's like, I can't even prove to you that you and I are having this conversation. But what I can do is provide you evidence. I can't provide you proof. But again, people in Joe Rogan's world and people that kind of have this rationalist, materialist ideal of how everything got here and that type of philosophy, they just think to themselves, wait, you have faith? But everyone has faith. Because Joe Rogan has faith that the chair that he sits in to do the podcast is going to hold him up. Well, how does he know that? Well, from evidence. Because he has sat in that chair. He sat in many chairs over his life. And so he knows it's going to hold his weight. And he's not just going to go splat on the floor. All right, back to the clip here.
I mean, that's a good answer. I always wonder when people are telling stories, though. Like, how long did that story take before people wrote it down? How many times did people alter it? Just like they do with everything today. I got to imagine that at a certain point in time in history, they probably didn't tell the truth about a lot of things. And we take those things, tell them through oral traditions, have them written down.
Well, there's a difference between lies and between the truth getting, you know, manipulated and twisted a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The underlying usually is still there.
So this is actually a really good point by Kid Rock that, you know, things do get twisted over time, but the underline is still there. And so that's what people, you know, again, I don't want to get into a discussion of inerrancy right now, but that's when people are like, okay, if there was a problem in the Bible, which again, I'm not saying this, but if people are making that argument, it's like Jesus rising from the dead, right? That's kind of the main point, right? But the thing that Joe Rogan is doing right here is he's using a very polite cover-all language to take a direct shot at the transmission of the historical accounts of what happened as described in the Bible. That's what he's doing. Because he's like, oh, you know, oral histories and people wrote things down. And then, you know, he didn't mention it during this interview, but he always talks about eyewitness testimony and how it's not even admissible in court because we can't have eyewitness testimony. But the thing about it is that's actually a dramatic overreach in terms of eyewitness testimony. Because if there was an eyewitness to a crime, then don't you think that the defense or the prosecution in that case would want that eyewitness to be there depending upon where their client is in that continuum? Well, of course they would. Now, there might be issues with certain details, and that's what people talk about when they talk about the inadmissibility of eyewitness testimony. Some people don't remember exactly what time it is when something happened. Some people don't know exactly what color shirt the person was wearing. Some people are a little bit fuzzy on what direction they ran as soon as they left the scene of the crime. But if they saw someone shoot someone else in the head and they can identify that person as the shooter, that is obviously pertinent to the case. So again, this coverall language, he's taking shots in a very subtle, polite way. Let's go back to the clip here.
So you think the real truth was that he actually was the Son of God?
Yes.
It'd be amazing if it was true.
It is amazing.
I believe you. I believe that you believe that.
Okay, again, I want to commend Joe Rogan for being very polite. He seems open, even though he's very closed off. We'll see more of that here in a second. But when you say something like, I believe that you believe that, think about the last time you said that to your spouse. How'd that go? Because, you know, when you're talking to your spouse, you know, all the gloves are kind of off most of the time, you know, all the pretensions are laid down, because that's a really, really polite way of telling someone that their position is stupid. That's essentially what you're doing. You know, I believe that you believe that. It's like, that's a sentence that doesn't need to be said. So again, he's being very subtle, but he's going to come out of that subtlety more here in a second. So back to the clip.
Would you like to be introduced to Jesus?
Listen, I think the concept of Jesus is absolutely amazing. And if Jesus came here and wanted to visit me, I would be psyched.
So you can tell that he got immediately uncomfortable with the question and he kind of had a, which he doesn't really do ums and uhs very often. But then he defaults to this, you know, concept of Jesus thing. So first of all, Joe is avoiding Kid Rock's question, to begin with, but Kid Rock's going to stay on him. But beyond that, this notion of the concept of Jesus, as he described it, that's basically just New Age speak for, you know, Jesus had some good ideas and lived a good life according to the Bible. Because you'll hear people say that. You'll hear non-Christians say that. But we have to go back to C.S. Lewis's trilemma. Jesus was either a liar, a lunatic, or Lord. Because again, liar. If he claimed to be God and that was not true, then he is a liar. Thus, he is not a good moral teacher. If he's a lunatic that claimed to be God and, you know, in reality was not God, that also would not be a good moral teacher. You would not follow a lunatic. The only other option is Lord. And so Jesus himself takes away that crutch of, you know, for the people that don't want to believe in him or just flat out don't believe in him, for you to say something like, well, you know, he was probably a good teacher, right? You know, he said some good things. He lived a good life. No, he claimed to be God and he wasn't. And he was either crazy or was doing it knowingly. Like, that's not a good thing. That's not somebody that you can put your faith in. All right, back to the clip here.
Would you like to know Jesus?
In what way?
I can put my pastor on your show.
I'm good.
Okay, so he just straight up asks him, do you want to know Jesus? And he's like, you know, kind of vacillates. And then he's like, you want me to put my, you know, pastor on the phone? And he says, I'm good. And so I'm inferring some things here. So I'm taking a little bit of license just from his response and, you know, the hours and hours I've heard him talk about this. But Joe Rogan's dismissiveness of even that comment or that offer from Kid Rock comes off as intellectually dishonest. Because he's seemingly already made his mind up on the concept of Christianity and the existence of a real Jesus, and he doesn't want his position to be challenged. Because again, I ask you guys all the time, you know, if you're thinking you're about to get into a debate with somebody, you should ask them, hey, if you were wrong about that, would you want to know? It's a very, very important question. Because depending upon their response, if they're dismissive or, you know, derisive towards you or rude or something like that, well, then just don't engage in that conversation because it's not going to be a conversation that is had in good faith. Back to the clip here.
She's great. Pastor Paula White.
Very,
she's Trump's spiritual advisor, too.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You should have her on the show. Talk about Jesus.
I'm very interested in the idea of Jesus being a real person.
Okay, so this is where it gets off the rails just a little bit. Paula White is legitimately a crazy person. She's a televangelist. She preaches prosperity gospel. Again, she's not even a real pastor because that role was given by God to males specifically. So lots of problems there. So in a way, I'm glad that Joe Rogan didn't just, you know, jump at the chance to have her on his show because she would be a terrible representative for Christianity and what the Bible says. So, you know, we'll just stick there. But there was a quote Joe Rogan used there that he's very interested in the idea of Jesus being a real person. He's very interested in the idea of Jesus being a real person. Guys, hear me when I say this. Again, Joe Rogan is a very, very smart person. But this is legitimately one of the dumbest and most ignorant things that anyone can say about any subject matter ever. Seriously. No hyperbole. It's so dumb. Because there is literally no more attestable fact in all of ancient history than that a man named Jesus lived in the Middle East, died on a Roman cross at the behest of the Jewish Sanhedrin, and was buried in a tomb. Now I'm stopping before the resurrection, but there was a man named Jesus, lived in the Middle East, died on a Roman cross. This was at the behest of the Jewish Sanhedrin, and he was buried in a tomb. If you believe anything else from antiquity or ancient history, but you question even the mere existence of a real man named Jesus that performed a public ministry in his early 30s, you are either a complete fool or you are deeply ignorant about the subject matter. Deeply. Because I'll hear Joe Rogan or anybody else, they'll talk about Genghis Khan. They'll talk about Alexander the Great. They'll talk about Julius Caesar. They'll talk about, you know, even ancient civilizations. And they talk about it as if the things that we have that tell the story of what these people did or didn't do, that we can trust those things, but gosh, we can't trust the Bible. Even though the number of manuscripts we have that are as close to the events that are being described is astronomically more than about anybody else. There is more evidence that Jesus was a real person that lived in the Middle East, that died on a Roman cross at the behest of the Jewish Sanhedrin and was buried in a tomb than that Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon. There's more evidence. But here's the thing. What people do when they get into this type of argument is they're like, well, we can't trust the Bible. Again, he's already established that early in this is like, you know, it's oral traditions. And he's talked before about, well, hey, it was written down in, you know, Greek and Aramaic and Latin and all these different things. And then it was translated into German and then into English. And, you know, you can't go from, you know, Hebrew to English and get all the same meanings. And so we don't even know if these stories happen, you know, blah, 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 blah. But let's say I granted that to him, which I wouldn't, but let's say I did. Even if we delete the Word of God, the Bible, from existence, even if you categorically consider every single thing written in the Bible to be mythical or a, you know, convoluted series of lies, we in modernity would still know that a real man named Jesus performed a public ministry in his early 30s in the Middle East around 2,000 years ago. How would we know this? Because of the scores of non-Christian writings by non-Christians that are outside of the Bible that prove exactly that. So you've heard some of these names before, but I just want to give you some of these people. These are non-Christians that wrote about this man named Jesus, about followers of the way, and about what they thought about Jesus, okay? These are people that have, they were at the very least disinterested in Christians and Christianity and their philosophy, but at the very most, they were hostile towards it. So we have Jewish historian Flavius Josephus. We have Roman historian Tacitus. We have Roman governor Pliny the Younger. We have a pagan author named Lucian of Samosata. We have a Greek philosopher named Celsus or Celsus. We have a Greek writer named Phlegon of Tralles. Some of these I'm going to get the pronunciations off. We have a Syriac Stoic philosopher named Mara Bar Serapion. We have a Roman historian named Suetonius. And there are also tons of references to Jesus that exist in Jewish rabbinic writings. So the Babylonian Talmud in particular has references to Jesus. And there are more. There certainly are more. But we have all these writings that are outside of the Bible. And I don't hear Joe Rogan talk about that ever. So again, it's just such a foolish thing to say, to even question that Jesus didn't exist. Again, there are atheist historians. I wish I had the clip because there's one in particular I'm thinking of. There's an atheist historian who does not believe that Jesus is a risen Christ that said, for anyone to question that Jesus actually existed is one of the most foolish things that you can do. You cannot consider yourself to be a true historian or to be a respecter of what history can teach us if you question that. You just can't do those things at the same time. All right, back to the clip here.
But I look at it the same way I look at everything else. Whereas like let's circle back.
You told me that you believed in Bigfoot.
No, I was joking around. I was joking around. But I wanted Bigfoot to be real for sure. Just like I want Jesus to be real.
He is?
Well, the thing, Bigfoot used to be real.
Okay, so this is just kind of further driving home that Joe Rogan doesn't believe that Jesus even existed. And, you know, he's probably, I don't think he talked about it, but it's like Gigantopithecus. He talks about, you know, they found bones of like these giants and all that. And so that Bigfoot used to be real, but probably still isn't real or something like that. But let's go back into the clip here.
The thing that I found out when I really got fascinated by Bigfoot.
You know how you know Jesus is real right in this moment?
How?
Because the forgiveness that I am exercising by drinking this Bud Light right now.
Oh, that's Jesus?
That's Jesus. Jesus is everywhere. He's in this room. He's in the world. He's in the universe. By the aliens that you want so desperately to be real or have the concept of them being real, that's Jesus.
Mm.
That is Jesus. Mm. As a Christian, I have to believe in forgiveness.
Beautiful. Cheers.
Well said.
Oh, boy. Okay, so it was getting off the rails with the Paula White, and it's gotten off the rails even more so. So I don't think in this clip that Kid Rock is referring to the omnipresence and omnipotence of God when he's saying that. This is more kind of a new age kind of a thing, kind of like an avatar kind of thing, like everything's connected and, you know, we're all kind of, you know, brought together in this weird kind of interesting way. And he goes a little bit further with it. So let's go back to the clip.
I never thought I'd have to explain Jesus to drinking a fucking Bud Light, but
you're not explaining it. You're saying how you feel.
Jesus it's and like, God are everywhere. They're everywhere. Yeah. Every time you look at a flower that blooms, or you look at one of your children, you're like, "That's Jesus. That is Jesus. That is God."
Yeah, I want to be real clear. I'm not like
I just saw a shooting star. Yeah. How fucking cool is that? That's God going bang, nailed it.
No, it's not. It's just not. So I think I get what Kid Rock is trying to say here, but it's just very, very clunky. Okay. So God and Jesus, and I guess you can throw in the Holy Spirit in there. So, you know, you can get them all there. They are not flowers blooming or, you know, the feeling that you get when you see your kid do something awesome. Like God in three persons created those things. He intervenes in our world to allow for such things inside of his creation mandate, but he is not those things. So specifically Jesus, if you are Christian, as Kid Rock purports to be, he was fully God and fully man. So like he had skin, he had organs, he had feelings, he had bowel movements, like he was a human being, but he was also God simultaneously. So no, Jesus is not nature. God is not any of those things. It's a creation of those things, but it's outside of them as a being, if that makes sense. All right, we're about to close out the clip here, so one last one here. Let's go to it.
Sort of. That's every 30 seconds that happens.
I haven't seen one all fucking
They've
interview.
Been doing it all,
I just happen
time.
To be speaking passionately
they
about Jesus and God, and that motherfucker went whoop.
But that's how confirmation bias happens. People, that's what makes people believe certain things, like that Jesus sent that suit. That fucking star's on a... Maybe you timed it right.
That's Jesus.
It could be coincidental.
That's Jesus.
All right, so it's very interesting here as we close out that clip where he brings up confirmation bias. So what he's referring to, for those of you that have not seen the physical clip, in Joe Rogan's studio, he has like stars and stuff around him. And so there are shooting stars and the stars are like blinking and things like that. So Kid Rock saw a shooting star right after he said his point. And so he's like, no, that's Jesus. And then Joe Rogan's like, no, that's just a coincidence. It literally happens all the time. But when Joe Rogan brings up confirmation bias, it's so interesting that he's done that because that's literally what he does to intellectually protect himself from having to reckon with the real Jesus. He does this all the time. So he will only listen to sources or to people seemingly that agree with his position. Again, he didn't want to talk to this pastor. He didn't really want to engage in this discussion with Kid Rock because he himself doesn't even believe that Jesus existed, which, as we've already said, you know, we've beaten that dead horse, like, is one of the dumbest things that anyone could say. So with all this in mind, you might be thinking, like, you know, why is this such a big deal? Why do we need to care about what one person, again, Kyle, you said we shouldn't care about what one person does in terms of their own personal salvation as much as maybe just anybody else, even, you know, a neighbor in our neighborhood or something like that. But why is this such a big deal? Why did you spend so much time on this today? And so I have a few reasons. The first is because Joe Rogan has his own gravitational pull, right? He has the biggest microphone. He has an incredible number of fans. He's mega nine figures rich. And the thing is because of that, he has a tremendous amount of influence on people, all kinds of people. And a lot of that is in a very, very, very positive direction with health and with sports and activities and things like that. Like, I get it. But I don't want his cynicism and his skepticism to pull you or anyone like you away from God. Because I kind of brought this up as it pertained to Jocko Willink. There was a few years ago where Jocko Willink came to a church in Tulsa and he was paid an unbelievable amount of money to come and speak at a men's event at a church in Oklahoma. But I have it on good authority that one of the things Jocko Willink stipulated in his contract that during the Q&A, he did not want to be asked about his personal faith. That if he was asked about his personal faith, that he was going to, you know, basically stop the event. So a church spent a ridiculous amount of money to bring Jocko Willink, who for all intents and purposes, as far as we can tell, is a non-Christian, to speak to Christians about Christian manhood. See any issues there? See any potential pitfalls? Because here's the thing. If you're one of the guys in that crowd and you want to know about discipline, he's a great source for that. If you want to know about controlling your emotions, Jocko Willink is a great source for that. If you want to know about pushing the mental capabilities that you have, being better in business, overcoming adversity, taking extreme ownership, prioritizing and executing and all that kind of stuff, Jocko is your dude. But the point of the event was to make men better Christians. In this church, you know, they filled the place up, but they definitely didn't hit the target in terms of that goal. So there are a lot of guys that listen to Joe Rogan because they like his workout advice. They think he's funny. They want to know more about how they can, you know, biohack their health. And they want to learn about subject matters that they don't know a whole lot about. And so if you already follow him and believe him and trust him on all these other different topics, why would you not also trust his cynicism and skepticism about God, Christianity, the existence of Jesus? That's problematic. Another reason I want to talk about this is because Christian apologetics is really important. It really is. Some people kind of poo-poo on apologetics and they're just not really big fans of it. And I've heard people say on, years ago, the Bad Christian podcast, that one of the guys I think went to seminary and was studying apologetics. And then he realized one day, he's like, if all this was just true, we wouldn't need to study apologetics, which is so foolish. It's such a foolish position. Like, oh, well, we don't need to study all these tactics about how to have conversations because if it's true, it's just true. But as we've seen, even from scripture, there were people that watched Jesus do miracles that didn't believe in him. There were people that watched him ascend to heaven that were like, I don't know. There's got to be another explanation for it, right? Which leads to the last point, which goes to the scripture I read at the beginning of the podcast here, this episode, is because we have to stand ready to give an account for why we believe what we believe. That's 1 Peter 3:15, but in your hearts honor Christ, the Lord, as holy, always being prepared to make a defense or an apologia to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect. Okay? Some of us struggle with the gentleness and respect piece. You know, I've been there. I've certainly been there and done that. But we have to stand ready to give an account. Christian apologists help you do that. A deep study of the Bible helps you do that. The Holy Spirit helps you do that. But we have a role to play in all of that, in every last bit of it. And so again, if you're following Joe Rogan, if you're listening to these types of interviews, you need to be skeptical of where he's coming from when he's talking about subjects like this that he himself is deeply ignorant on. Studying Christian apologists, like, again, you can't really refer to him, but the stuff that Ravi Zacharias did, the stuff that Frank Turek does, the stuff that Elisa Childers does, Greg Kokel, and there are many more. Studying the tactics, that's, you know, no pun intended with Greg Kokel, but studying these things will help you live out and honor what we see in 1 Peter 3. Because the more confident you are to make a defense for your faith, likely the more often you will share it, which is what we're called to do anyway. Hey guys, real quick, if you're anything like me, you are constantly on the lookout for high quality products that are actually made here in America by American hands. The problem is that a lot of American companies have outsourced their labor overseas, so it's an American company, but it's supporting people that don't live here. So I've always wanted to partner with an American company that prioritizes America, American workers, and making all of their materials here in this country. That's why I want to remind you that we are partnered with Origin. Origin is an apparel company based in Maine, and they are focused on getting as much manufacturing back to the United States as they can possibly do. What do they make? They make the best jujitsu gis on the planet, and these are the only jujitsu gis that are made completely in America. They also make jeans. Yes, they're stretchy and awesome. They also make amazing hunting gear, and I know you guys love your Kuyu and your Sitka, but those companies use overseas labor, and they don't do that to help you guys out. They do that to increase their profit margins. Origin also makes boots and work boots, and yes, that does include steel-toe boots. And in the fall of last year, they launched a line of everyday clothing. Their Versa pants are their everyday pants, and they are just especially phenomenal. They also make other outdoor clothes and workout clothes, and they're launching new apparel stuff all the time. If you haven't already, you need to check them out and support a company that supports America and America's workers. Try Origin out today by going to www.originusa.com. That's originusa.com. Use the promo code UNDAUNTED to get 10% off of your order. Again, that's originusa.com. Promo code UNDAUNTED to get 10% off of your order. All right, let's go ahead and get into our quick hitters. The first one here, Donald Trump's incoherent and amoral stance on federal abortion law. So on Monday, April the 8th, Trump released a around 4 minute long, 4 minutes, 20 seconds-ish video explaining his position on abortion. So a lot of people were asking about it. They were kind of wondering where he was going to come out in terms of this election cycle. Now, I put the entire video in the show notes so that you can go watch it for yourself. But I do just want to kind of give you the highlights because I'm not going to show the clip here. But he supports IVF availability in all 50 states. So I did an episode last week on IVF. You guys should definitely check that out. That was essentially all he talked about for the first minute of the video. And then, you know, he transitioned into talking about abortion. So in terms of what he talked about in abortion, he talked about being glad that Roe v. Wade was overturned, and he gives himself, you know, the biggest pat on the back and credit for that, which again, he is due that because of the three Supreme Court picks that he got. And he is also okay with the states deciding their own abortion laws. Essentially, he signaled that there was going to be no support from him and his administration for a federal abortion ban. He says that the issue of abortion is up to the will of the people. He used that phrase. He supports abortion allowances for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And he really focused in on winning elections, which is true. You've heard me say a bunch of times, elections have consequences. But that was kind of the whole thing around his commentary was like, look, we got to win elections. And that's going to really kind of flow me into the big takeaway. So I have several big takeaways on this. The first is that this is just a political ploy to appease independents. You know, Republicans, Democrats, and independents all see this the same way, right? Except for the sycophantic, you know, MAGA people. But everyone sees this the same way. He's trying to appeal to the middle because Joe Biden is running as fast as he can to his left. And he's already been super left in his administration so far. But independents hate him. They flat out do. They didn't hate him as much in 2016. They really hated him in 2020 because they broke, you know, 2-1 for Biden. But these are independents that these people that he's appealing to, these people aren't going to vote for him. They're not going to vote for him. Like, regardless of his position on abortion or any other issue, they don't want to vote for him because they hate him. That's his biggest problem, is there is no middle ground on Trump. So basically, these middle ground people, these independents, they're still just like everybody else. They either love him or they hate him. They think he's a insurrectionist terrorist, or they think he's, you know, a godsend, right? And so he's appealing to people that aren't going to switch their votes based on this video, certainly. But also, he's signaling that he thinks that the biggest reason pro-lifers were against Roe for all of these decades is because it usurped states' rights, which was obviously never the point. The point was that we don't think you should be allowed to murder unborn children. That's the point of why we wanted Roe to be gone and Planned Parenthood v. Casey to be gone. But on the tarmac, whenever, you know, we're going to talk about the Arizona law here in just a second, but Arizona put in this law, or they basically allowed for this law that's been on the books for a very long time. Trump was asked on the tarmac here recently, you know, what do you think about that? And he says, oh, you know, they're going too far. They went too far on that. And so it's like, wait a minute. You signal in this little thing that you just want to do whatever the states say. You know, we're going to go with the will of the people and that's going to be fine. But then when the will of the people in Arizona was being allowed for, you're like, oh, they went too far. Like, you can't do that. Like, that's obnoxious and ridiculous. And Carrie Lake's another one. So Carrie Lake is a, you know, sycophantic MAGA person. And so she lost the governorship, the governor's race, to basically a person that barely has a pulse. And now she's running for Senate. You know, Arizona is seen as a toss-up state, as a purple state. Like, Carrie Lake has a chance. Trump has a chance. Everyone kind of has a chance there, right? And the problem is a year ago, Carrie Lake was saying that she wanted this Arizona law, again, that we're going to talk about here in a second, to go into effect because we shouldn't kill unborn children. And she, you know, she did all the pro-life signaling until now. Now she's like, oh man, this is way too far. You know, hopefully the legislature of Arizona goes against this. Well, why would Trump and Carrie Lake change their tune? Because they want to get elected. They want to raise money and they want to get elected. And also because they know that pro-lifers aren't going to flip and vote for Biden. They just can't do it. So the ardent pro-lifers like me, we're going to hold our nose and vote for people like Donald Trump and Carrie Lake. That's why they're doing it. But also Trump, he kept repeating in this video, this phrase, follow your heart, follow your heart, which is literally some of the dumbest advice that you could ever give someone. Because the heart is wicked. And how many things have you done in your life? How many mistakes have you made where you followed your heart? You didn't follow your head. You didn't follow reason. You didn't follow the word of God. You didn't follow the promptings of the Holy Spirit. You just followed your heart, whatever the hell that means. It's just stupid advice in general. But the last thing here on this story, Democrats have already signaled that if given the chance, right, if they've got the White House, if they have super majorities in the Senate, which is not likely, but if they get a super majority in the Senate, if they've got the House of, you know, House of Representatives, and if they can somehow stack the Supreme Court or replace some of these conservatives on the Supreme Court, that they will go, not are willing to, but they will go far beyond just reinstating Roe. They want abortion access enshrined in federal law. They want it to be up to the point of birth. They want it to be for any reason given, and they want taxpayers to pay for it. That is the Democratic Party position, okay? So in this video, what Donald Trump did is he ceded ground to the Democrats on this issue of life. Because again, there is no middle ground. There's only, yeah, we should be able to kill them for any reason, and then, no, we shouldn't kill them. They're human beings. They're protected. There's no middle ground. And so guys, if there is going to be federal abortion laws, or a federal abortion law, it may as well be a pro-life law. And what we're getting from Donald Trump right now, who again, I've said, is the most pro-life candidate or the most pro-life president in history, which he is, this is the problem that we run into when you don't actually have pro-life convictions. Because as I've said many times, if you've listened to me for any length of time, he is the most pro-life president in history, bar none. But I don't believe that he is pro-life in his heart. And we are seeing that now. Because he sees a pathway around this issue that Democrats are going to use as a club during this election cycle. And he's doing it for votes because he's very squishy morally on this issue. All right, next quick hitter here. Vice President Kamala Harris becoming the first sitting vice president to visit an abortion facility. So this is according to the UK Guardian. Kamala Harris visits a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic on Tuesday, March the 14th, becoming what is believed to be the first vice president ever to do so. She is, by the way, the first vice president or president to ever do this while in office. Harris stopped by a clinic in Minnesota, a state where abortion remains legal following the overturning of Roe v. Wade, as part of her nationwide tour to highlight the impact of Roe's downfall. Harris also toured the clinic, which remained open to patients as the nation's first female vice president made her historic visit. Walking through the clinic, that's what I saw. people who have dedicated their lives to the profession of providing healthcare in a safe place that gives people dignity, Harris told reporters after her tour. And I think we should all want that for each other. Harris and Joe Biden are banking on outrage over Roe to help propel them to a second term in the White House come November. Anger over the landmark decision's demise was credited with helping stop a much-promised red wave of Republican victories in 2022 midterms, as well as leading abortion rights to triumph in multiple ballot initiatives, including in red states such as Kentucky, Kansas, and Ohio. So right to the big takeaway on this one, her going to this abortion facility, to this Planned Parenthood facility, this abortion mill in Minnesota, this was more than just a symbolic gesture. Politicians are big on symbolism and symbolic gestures and, you know, ribbon cuttings and that kind of stuff. This is way more than that. This was complete confirmation that the Democratic Party is the party of death and child sacrifice. That's what they are. Because again, I'll remind you of the Democratic position on abortion. Abortion for any reason, at any point of pregnancy, and paid for by taxpayer dollars. That's the position. So, a woman, this is the Democrat position, a woman can be on her way to deliver a baby. Her water has broken. She's being rushed to the hospital. And at that moment, she can go, hey, actually, can, as opposed to going to the hospital to deliver, I'd like to go to this facility and have this child killed. The Democrats are like, well, it's her choice. So that's fine. Let's make sure she has as much access to that as possible, if that is her decision. And then let's make sure she doesn't have to pay for it. Let's make sure she doesn't have to travel far for that. But again, I want to go back to Kamala Harris's quote. I'll read it again. Walking through this clinic, that's what I saw. People who have dedicated their lives to the profession of providing healthcare in a safe place that gives people dignity. Healthcare. Democrats believe that killing unborn human beings that are alive, that feel pain, that's healthcare. And then she talks about a safe place. Well, is an abortion a safe place for an unborn child? Obviously not. Because what they would consider to be an unsuccessful abortion is where the baby makes it, right? Remember Melissa Odin on the show a couple months back? She was supposed to be killed with an abortion and it was unsuccessful. That's why she's alive and well today. And then her last little quote, it gives people dignity. I guess it only applies to the women that are coming into the facility, right? Because we give no dignity to the little boys and girls that are inside the wombs of these people. And so again, when you talk to a Democrat, when you talk to a Joe Biden voter, this is why I say all the time, you cannot be a Christian and vote for a candidate that is so pro-abortion, like Joe Biden. You cannot call yourself a Christian and vote for Joe Biden in November. I don't care what his ideas are on foreign policy, on tax policy, on immigration, on infrastructure, on anything else, because he is for this. And even if, like, you know, kind of a, you know, alternate image of Trump, if you will, let's say Joe Biden is in his heart not for this, that he is pro-life in his heart. Well, I don't care if he's pro-life in his heart, because the way he legislates is towards the murdering of unborn image bearers of Christ. And we just can't stand for that. All right, next quick hitter here. Arizona reinstates a statewide abortion ban law. So let's dig in here with a New York Times report. Arizona's highest court on Tuesday, April the 10th, upheld an 1864 law that bans nearly all abortions, a decision that could have far-reaching consequences for women's health care and election year politics in a critical battleground state. Physicians are now on notice that all abortions except those necessary to save the woman's life are illegal, the court said in a 4-2 decision. But the court, whose justices are all Republican appointees, also put its ruling on hold for the moment and sent the matter back to a lower court for additional arguments about the law's constitutionality. Abortion providers said they expected to continue performing abortions through May as their lawyers and Democratic lawmakers search for a new legal argument and additional tactics to delay the ruling. So the Republican-controlled legislature of the state of Arizona, which, you know, is very concerned about the November election and being able to keep their seats and all that kind of stuff, and really they should be, they may end up repealing this. Okay, so I'm recording this the week before it comes out. I doubt it gets repealed before the time, before you guys hear this on time, but it may get repealed, so we'll just have to kind of wait and see on this. And again, that's exactly what Donald Trump and Carrie Lake want to happen. So again, for those of you Donald Trump voters and Carrie Lake voters, just keep that in mind. But let's go to the big takeaway here. This is obviously a good thing. Like Arizona putting this in place where illegally it's going to be way harder to kill babies. This is obviously a good thing. But Republicans and conservatives and pro-lifers need to stop ceding ground on the health of the mother front, okay? So I want to focus in on that thing because this law allows for that, except for the health of the mother, because here's the reality. Again, just follow me here because you're going to think I'm crazy, but just follow me. It is never medically necessary to perform an abortion to save the life of the mother. Let me repeat myself. It is never medically necessary to perform an abortion to save the life of the mother. And you might think, but Kyle, I've heard of these stories where these women, you know, got sick and they needed treatment. And so they have to perform an abortion in order to save mom. Hey, there's some sort of an ailment that is, you know, related to the pregnancy where they have to target the child for destruction in order to save the mother. You know, maybe you've heard of chorioamnionitis. That's where the amniotic fluid gets an infection. And Kyle, the only way that we can, you know, treat the infection to save mom is to kill the baby. Kyle, I've heard these stories of these women that have cancer and the cancer is manifesting in their abdominal area in and around the baby that they're pregnant with at the time, and the only way to save mom is to kill the baby to get her treatment. It's just not true. I want to give you the pro-life argument and then go back to this. The pro-life argument in its most simple form has two parts to it. Part one, abortion intentionally and directly kills innocent human life. Part two, it is always wrong to intentionally and directly kill innocent human life. Let me repeat. Part one, abortion intentionally and directly kills innocent human life. Part two, it is always wrong to intentionally and directly kill innocent human life. So let's take one of these scenarios, you know, pick your one, pick whatever one, cancer, chorioamnionitis, you know, some sort of a thing that's happening. In that scenario, the only thing that an abortion procedure does is delay the treatment to try and save the woman's life, the mother's life. That's all it is. So let's take the, you know, cancer thing, and it's, you know, manifesting in the abdomen somewhere. Taking the time to kill the baby so that you can treat her cancer delays her cancer treatment. Because you don't just like kill the baby and they wheel you into a different room and then start doing, you know, your cancer treatment. Like, that's not how it goes. You're delaying her treatment. And we have seen examples of this. I think this one I'm thinking of is in the UK, where they literally took the womb out of a woman, set it to the side, and performed a surgery to remove, you know, cancerous tissue in her abdomen, put the baby back in, sewed her up. Mom's okay, baby's okay. Now, unfortunately, because of the fall and because of horrible circumstances, there are times when it is impossible to preserve the life of the baby in the womb and the mother. It's impossible to do that. I think about ectopic pregnancies. So that's a tubal pregnancy. That is where the, you know, the baby gets stuck in the fallopian tube, so it can't implant in the uterus. It can't grow. Almost 100% of the time, over 90% of the time, the baby's already in pieces in the fallopian tube. But there are times when the baby, the human life, is still alive, but it's stuck in the fallopian tube. We don't have the technology available to flush that baby out of the fallopian tube into the uterus so it can implant and grow there. It can't grow in the fallopian tube. And if you leave the baby in the fallopian tube, if you leave the tube, you know, undisturbed, not only is the baby already dead or going to die, it is very life-threatening for mom. So currently, we don't have a process that can save mom and the baby. So we save mom. But again, let me take you back to the pro-life argument. Abortion intentionally and directly kills innocent human life. And it's always wrong to intentionally and directly kill innocent human life. In that moment, when you are removing the fallopian tube from a woman that's having an ectopic pregnancy, you are not targeting that baby for destruction. That is a very unfortunate and sad byproduct of saving mom. Guys, this is so important for you to understand. Again, they're not targeting the baby for murder. They're not targeting the baby to kill them. But the process of saving mom unfortunately kills the child. Let's go back to that pregnancy example over in the UK where they remove the woman's womb and put it to the side and treat her in her stomach and all that. Well, let's say during that process, during the surgery or in the recovery thereafter, something that they did to protect mom, because again, like the third leading cause of death in America are medical issues and problems and something like that. Let's say that that actually happened. Okay. They didn't target the baby for destruction. It was an unfortunate byproduct of what happened. They didn't target it for destruction. Again, we've got to be clear on this, because when you say that, okay, we're anti-abortion except for rape or incest, you're saying that the, you know, the circumstances of the conception confer personhood or value, that you are not a valuable human being if your mother, if the, you know, the father raped the mother, right? That's what you're saying, which you can't be pro-life and believe that. But also, you have to realize that there is no such thing as an abortion in order to save the life of the mother. It's just not true. All right, let's go to the next quick hitter here. A U.S. medical academic journal falsely claiming that 64,000 children have been conceived in rape in pro-life states. So this is according to National Review. This week, the academic journal JAMA International Medicine published a study claiming that tens of thousands of pregnancies resulted from rape in states that enacted strong post-Dobbs pro-life laws. Specifically, the article claims that since Dobbs, 519,981 rapes took place in states with strong pro-life laws in effect. This purportedly resulted in 64,565 children conceived in rape. The study was quickly and uncritically covered by a number of mainstream media outlets, including CNN, NBC News, The Houston Chronicle, Axios, Time, and The Huffington Post. To call these figures an exaggeration would be an understatement. The article is frankly one of the worst and most misleading pieces of advocacy research that I have ever encountered in my years as a social scientist. Furthermore, the fact that this article appeared in a prestigious peer-reviewed journal grants it legitimacy and credibility that it absolutely does not deserve. There are significant problems with the methodology that the authors used. So the article will be in the show notes. You can check that out. They do a deep dive on the methodology. But you can read the whole article, but I'm essentially going to say it this way. The article and the research inflated the number of rapes resulting in conception. They inflated the number of rapes in total that occurred. Their figures about the percentage of abortions that take place because of rape are also not backed up by any data whatsoever. Okay, so that's kind of the gist of it, the 30,000 foot view of it. But let me go to my big takeaway here. Don't trust journals or media outlets that are staffed by left-wingers. They have proven time and time again that they are willing to lie in order to reach their desired goal. Again, as this article talked about, he talked about it. Let me go back to the, see if I can find the quote. Sorry, I can't find it. I can't find it that quick. Anyway, I like how he said it and then I can't find it. Anyway, but it's basically like advocacy research or something like that. I couldn't find it in the quote there. But this is advocacy research. And so that's why, and again, a lot of people are more so tuned up to this because of COVID. But, you know, you can't just take what the experts tell you. Oh, a study shows that this, this, and this happened. And then, gosh, 99 times out of 100, you go to the study and the study is junk. There have been, you know, studies done in this whole transgender thing, and the person or the people that are studied to provide this data is one person. So it's not tens of people, it's not hundreds of people, it's one person giving their anecdotal experience, and then someone will say, studies show. Now, we do this on the right as well. We read the headline, you know, or we read, you know, some sort of caption on Twitter, and we're like, oh, well, a study shows that this happened. You have to see if the study is any good. And in this particular case, the reason they're putting out a story like this in a run-up to an election like this is because they think it'll help people and it'll set the stage for what's going to happen here soon. So I'm going to talk about this here in a second with Florida, but there's going to be a ton of money pumped into every purple state or even states that, you know, can kind of flip certain seats starting in basically, you know, September and October. And they're going to be lying about all kinds of things as it pertains to the issue of abortion. And they'll be able to refer to this JAMA study as study shows, just so they can scare people into voting in a pro-abortion way. All right, last quick hitter here. The Florida Supreme Court allowing a 6-week abortion ban and opening the door for Florida voters in November to push the ban to the 15-week mark. So this is according to NBC News. In a pair of significant decisions on Monday, this was Monday of last week, I believe last week, the Florida Supreme Court upheld a 15-week ban on abortion in the state while also allowing a proposed amendment that would enshrine abortion protections in the state constitution to appear on the November ballot. The conservative-leaning court's decision on the 15-week ban also means that a six-week abortion ban, with exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the woman, that Governor Ron DeSantis signed into law last year, will take effect. But the bench's ruling to allow the constitutional amendment to appear on the ballot this fall means voters will have a chance in just 7 months to undo those restrictions. So on this story, guys, a bunch of different political commentators think that this being on the ballot in November puts the entire state of Florida in play. The entire state. Because Florida is seen by many to be a deep red state now, right? Thank you to Ron DeSantis, the best governor in America and the man who should have been the next president of the United States, but I digress. Many people think that this being on the ballot in November means that Senator Rick Scott, his seat is now in jeopardy, and that Biden might even be competitive or even beat Trump in Florida. So Florida has basically been a foregone conclusion. Everybody's focusing in on Arizona and Michigan and Wisconsin and Georgia and Pennsylvania and Nevada. But all of a sudden, people are thinking Florida might be in play. And if Florida's in play, Trump is mega screwed. I'm just going to tell you this right now. Because if they lose Florida right off the bat, we're not going to wait weeks to get it. Like, you know, Biden's getting his second term. But I'm telling you guys this, and if you're listening to this in Florida right now, God, listen with both of your ears and your brain turned on, this ballot initiative will 100% motivate pro-abortion Democrats to get out to the polls. And while they're voting to make sure that Floridians can murder their babies more conveniently and in a timetable that's better for them, they're going to go ahead and pull the lever for Joe Biden for president and for the Democrat opposing Rick Scott. So my big takeaway here is that Florida, again, if you're listening to me in Florida right now, be the first red state in the post-Roe era to stand up for life. Please. Kentucky didn't get it done. Kansas didn't get it done. Ohio didn't get it done. Please lead the way. Because I'm telling you this right now, if you're listening to me in Florida, because in Oklahoma, we don't get these political ads because every single county is going to vote for Trump, right? Both of our senators will always be Republicans, and most of our House reps will be Republicans as well. But in Florida, August, September, October, and into the first week of November, you are going to be flooded with ads full of lies. You're going to be told that unless you vote a particular way, that women in Florida that have a tubal pregnancy or an ectopic pregnancy, that they're not going to be able to get treatment for it, which is a lie. You're going to be told that, you know, this is going to significantly increase the number of women that are going to, you know, be raped or, you know, have some sort of incestuous relationship that leads to this, and that they're not going to be able to conveniently just go down the road and kill their baby. You're going to be told all these different things, and you're going to be fed lies. And the lies worked in Kentucky, they worked in Kansas, and they worked in Ohio. Because in general, the United States is a pro-life country. We're not extreme, because even by European standards, people look at our laws in America and they're like, wow, really? Y'all are looking for a 15-week ban? That's 4 months. 4 months, guys. Like, in people in Europe, like, I think the most woke European country has like a 12-week ban on abortion. We're like, hold my beer. Here's 3 more weeks. 15-week abortion ban seems extreme. Well, guess what? When people in America are actually informed about what goes on during an abortion, like the actual process, because some people are so dumb, they're so low IQ, they think that what's happening inside of the woman is just like this human-esque gumbo, and then right before the baby's delivered, it kind of coalesces into a human and then comes out as a baby. There are people that think that. They know nothing about the gestational cycles. They know nothing about the development of the baby in the womb. They know none of these things. And so they can very easily be swayed and be like, yeah, 6 weeks sounds extreme, but at 6 weeks, the heartbeat is already there. Like the organs are already present. Like the liver is processing nutrition and, you know, cell division and, you know, increase in size. All that's taking place. It's a living human being. But again, later on this year, you are going to be flooded with the wrong stuff. And again, if you're going to vote in a pro-abortion way on this, what these people that are going to be putting in that money into your state and into those ads for, they're assuming that you're going to go ahead and vote for the opposite of Trump and the opposite of Rick Scott. You just got to be ready for it. All right, guys, before we let you go, we are going to do a quick resilience boost. At Undaunted Life, our mission is equipping men to push back darkness with content that forges spiritual, mental, and physical resilience. And again, guys, go and support our sponsor for today's show. That is Origin. And here in the show notes, we've got a link to our donation page, guys. If you want us to keep producing content like this, you got to hop on board and support. And then everything I talked about in the Joe Rogan Kid Rock section and everything in the quick hitters, all those links are here for you as well. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Wherever you're listening to this, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a positive 5-star review. If you want me to come speak live at your event or on your podcast, just shoot me an email to info@undaunted.life. That's info@undaunted.life. Follow us on Instagram and like us on Facebook and check out our website for everything else, including how to donate to keep more content like this coming your way. Just go to www.undaunted.life. And also, we want to thank the band Holy Name for allowing us to use their music for our content. The music on this podcast is their song Perpetua, which is off their self-titled debut album on Face Down Records. The links are in the description. I'm your host, Kyle Thompson. Remember, keep pushing back darkness, keep forging spiritual, mental, and physical resilience, keep seeking the Lion of Judah.